Good morning, family. My name is Lawrence, and I'm an addict. First and foremost, I want to thank my higher power for another day clean and for the inner program for saving my life. And also for the people in these rooms for giving me their experience, strength, and hope. Before I get started, I guess I need to let you know a little bit about Lawrence. I am born and raised in New York City, Harlem. Came up from the city, pretty much from the streets, in a relatively functional family. I'm my only child. I've come up with some of the best things in life. I guess, you know, the old answers, your only child, you're spoiled, is true. Yeah, I was spoiled. But, you know, coming up in life, I never could really accept who I was. Always had to find something to make me feel either accepted or a part of or worthy. Sure, I had everything a child could want. But, you know, my father and I didn't get along, and he was I can't say he was an alcoholic, but he drank. But when I was a kid, you know, I started drinking right out the crib. You know, they used to give me gin and all of that, you know, just to get him to sleep. You know, here, go to sleep. So, you know, at a very early age, I felt the need to want to use, to get outside myself, you know. As I started growing up, you know, the disease just started progressing. I guess I was an addict, you know, from day one. You know, I always liked the feeling that I got when I either drank or drugged. I started drugging at like 12, you know, sniffing heroin. And I did that to be accepted, you know, to be a part of. I remember going to this camp, similar to this, walking in the room, seeing everybody in the cabin nodding. You want to try this? Yeah, okay. Just so I could fit in. I went on a run with the heroin for like 5 years, you know, between 12 and 17, and during that time I experienced other things, you know, but every time I picked something up, it was always because I wanted to fit in and be accepted. I just couldn't accept me for who I was. Now, I, you know, at the age of 12, after that first sniff, after that first 1-in-1 of the heroin, I saw my life going in a direction which I didn't like. You know, my parents brought me up with good morals, good values, everything. Everything that a normal parent would want for their kids. I knew right from wrong. I had been brought up in the church, you know. I had a spiritual connection with a higher power back then. But the more I started using, my spiritual connection left, my sense of self-worth left. But even though all of this had left, I still had an ego. You know, my ego was so inflated that I figured I could do almost anything. I could be anybody, do anybody. I was what you would call a street actor. You know, I could fit in or chameleon. I could literally fit in any situation. I don't care if I could go to the highest of the high with the kings, or the lowest of the low with the bums. You know, I could fit in. But I still didn't feel a part of. I had a lot of good opportunities and a lot of good things happened in my life, you know, at a younger age. You know, I traveled the world, was exposed to a lot of things, went to a lot of places, did a lot of things. But all throughout my childhood and my adolescence and teenage years, I always had to gain acceptance to prove myself to people just so that they know who I was. But the truth of the matter was, I didn't know who I was. You know, I knew that I was a good athlete. I knew that I was a good student. I knew that I could do anything that I set my mind out to do. Because one of the things that motivated me was the fact that I don't believe in quitting. You know, and no matter what I touch, I'm going to be the best at it. Whether it be school, drugs, sports, sex, making money, whatever. I'm going to do the best. I'm going to go all the way to the left or to the right. I'm an extremist. Either I'm all the way this way, I'm all the way this way. Either I'm a doer, or I ain't going to do nothing. That gray area that people talk about is about this wide. You know, I didn't know where that gray area began and where it ended. All I knew was there was a gray area, but I didn't know which way it was. Because I wanted to be either over here or I wanted to be over here. You know, for me, growing up in the city, I always had to prove myself because being the only child, being spoiled, being, you know, having some of the better things in life, I always wanted to be like the ones that didn't have because I wanted to feel like I could be just like y'all. When I didn't need to be, I just needed to be who I was. But once again, I didn't know who I was. I, at an early age, you know, like, all through my early drug addiction or drugging, I had a lot of accomplishments, but I could never see the accomplishments for what they were. You know, like, I got accepted to 72 Olympic trials for swimming. You know, and back then, you know, being a black person, I was some shit. You know, whoa, a black guy could swim. You know, I had made captain of the football team, you know, got accepted to go to West Point, you know, all of these accolades, but I still felt like a piece of shit. You know, and I used to always wonder, you know, ask myself, you know, I can do all these things, but why do I always feel so fucked up? You know, why can't I, you know, be happy? One, I was using. You know, I always had to use something to make me feel more than what I was. Emotional pain, emotional gladness and happiness, I didn't know what it was because, you know, I had medicated all my feelings in such a early age that I really didn't experience real feelings. You know, the first girl that I ever really fell in love with dumped me. And the only thing that I could do was grow news. The first time that I really had a real accomplishment that I was really proud of, I had to go use to celebrate. Always had to either use for good times, bad times, or times that were indifferent. But you know, this disease is powerful, it's cunning, it's insidious, it's all of that. You know, back in the early 70s, you know, heroin was so rampant that, you know, almost everybody in my neighborhood was a junkie. But me, I was like, nah, I can never do that. What winds up happening? I went to military school, by the way, for 5 years. And there were more drugs in military school than there was in public school in New York City. And I got to a point where I came home for a weekend because I've been getting high for a solid month. And I got sick for the first time. And I came home, my mom was like, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? I said, I don't know, I need to go to the doctor. Went to the doctor, told the doctor the truth, messed up for the first time in God knows how long. Said, you know, I've been doing heroin for the last month, and I think I might be becoming addicted. He said, no, there's no think and there's no becoming. You are. So he said, this is what you do. I'm going to put you into a treatment facility. Back then, it was a facility that was very big in New York called the Phoenix House. I said, no, I can't do that. I can't do that. I got my exams coming up. I've got the state trials coming up. I've got AUs coming up. You know, I got things I got to do. Well, we're not going to be able to do them if you don't do this. No, I can't do that. I declined. I did not go. And what I did was he gave me some, I don't know what he gave me, but he gave me some medication. I went home, and for a solid week, I'm crimped over like this, and sweating, and in pain. I sweated it out. And I said, God, I will never touch this shit again. But you know, I'm the type of addict that if I put this down, take this up, and put it down over here, and say I'm not going to bother with that, I'm going to go to the next thing. So, since I was basically a drunk from childhood, you know, I said, well, I can't get high no more because that'll make me into a junkie. I don't want to be a junkie. I'll just drink. I can handle that. Well, needless to say that, as I said before, I'm an extremist. I can't accept anything on first face value. I left that there. But when I picked this up, I went all out. By my senior year in college, I was drinking Thunderbird with cornflakes for breakfast. That's how far off to the right I went. And, you know, during those years, you know, it was, for me, it was all about being accepted. I went and played the fraternity, which I still love to my heart to this day. And that was part of being part of. Now, there were a lot of other benefits to it, but I'm not going to go there with that. but I still couldn't accept who I was. I still couldn't accept just being me. I always had to have something to take me outside of myself. You know, love. Okay, I put the heroin down, but now I've moved to the alcohol. Doctor says, well, you know something? Your liver's about the size of a grapefruit or football, and it looks like you got to live a 55-year-old drunk. If you don't stop drinking, you're going to die. Okay. Put it down. Stop. Cold turkey. I can do anything. If I feel that I could put two drugs down, just walk away from them, not pick them up anymore, I'm the great I am. Right? You believe that too, right? If you could just walk away, then your ego would be so big that you feel like you can do anything. That's the way I felt. Wrong answer. Because I put those down, but I had to pick something else up. Moved on to something else. What's next? Cocaine. Now, see, back then, I didn't know that I was an addict who had a disease. All I knew was that I liked to get high. I like to use. No matter what it was, I'll try it. My favorite motto back then was, I'll try anything once. But I didn't know what once meant. If I tried it once, that meant I had to keep going. You know, if I liked it, oh, I'm off to the races. I'm off the hook. And when I started, you know, I had sniffed coke for a long time, but never understood why people sniff coke. Everybody was like, well, it makes you feel good. It makes you get sexy and this and that. You know, and I'm like, all it does for me is make my face numb. You know, I couldn't see what it did. Now, all through my life, I had never picked up a needle. But, like I said, I'm an addict. You know, I'll try anything once. I never picked up a needle to shoot heroin. I never picked up a needle for any other kind of drug. But, you know, they say in this program that we need to stay away from people, places, and things because they'll get you high before you, you know, you can get them clean. Well, you know, I had brothers that, you know, use that spike. And, you know, for somebody who's never seen it done, to stand there and watch them, let me try that. You know, let me try that. But it wasn't heroin. They wanted to shoot heroin. I wanted to try it with the cocaine because they were doing heroin and coke. So I tried it with the coke. For the first time in my life, I told myself, I'm scared. Because the feeling I got when I put that needle in my arm was so good that it scared me to death. I don't ever want to do this again. So I backed away. That's the first time I ever was in fear of a drug. But I finally found out what the cocaine high was about. You know, I finally found out what the rave was. Oh, now I know what to look for. So, you know, I ran with that. But, you know, as I said, I'm an extremist. I started sniffing my way to Peru. I sniffed so much until I was waking up in pools of blood. I sniffed so much that I could take my pinky up one nostril and come out the other one. Once again, I have to go to the doctor because I'm digging scabs out of my nose the size of my fingernail. Doctor says, if you don't stop sniffing, you're going to kill yourself. So what do? I stop sniffing. Meanwhile, I meet somebody who picks up a little glass tube and puts this white shit in it and starts smoking. What's that? Oh, this is freebase. First time I tried it, lasted me 5 minutes. I don't like this shit. Oh, you ain't smoking right. Try it again. Now, I got definitely afraid of that feeling of putting a spike in my arm and the rush that I got. But when I smoked that pipe, for the first time, a feeling came over me that I think now I've arrived. I ran with that and started basing my way back to Peru and then to Colombia. I smoked so much until I couldn't smoke anymore, or I would smoke for weeks at a time. You know, like, you know, being, What I do for a living, I'm a studio engineer by trade. I you know, make commercials, shows, records, things like of that nature. And the circles that I was running in at that particular time were nowhere short of the affluent. And I was blessed, didn't realize it though, but I was blessed. I was making a nice substantial bit of chunk. And, you know, hanging and rubbing elbows with the rich and famous and so on and so forth. And in some of those circles, you know, the cocaine scene is like really off the hook. So, needless to say, my addiction really, that was a springboard for my addiction. Because I was a kid from Harlem who had all the connections, who knew where to get it and this and that. And I had to fit in by, I'll go get you this, or I'll go do this for you, you know, people pleasing. I just couldn't be happy with just being an ordinary person who did a 9-to-5 in a glamorous life. You know, I had to go beyond and try and seek out all those, and you know, we as addicts, we tend to gravitate to our own. You know, negativity to negativity, positivity to positivity, you know. They say opposites attract, but I don't know, as far as addiction is concerned, I don't really agree with that. But that's my personal opinion. But I started freebasing myself so much that slowly, I started losing friends, relatives, all the things that I said that I'd never do, I started doing. All the things that I said I'd never become, I started to become. Every time I said I will never, that was just a yet for me. I, you know, couldn't accept the fact that if I continue to use, I would lose. You know, sometimes, you know, in this program they say some are quicker, some are thicker, and then some are sicker. Well, I was the latter, because I was sick. But I just couldn't accept the fact that I was an addict. I still could not believe that I was an addict, because remember, I quit heroin on my own. I didn't have to use the program. I didn't have to use anybody's help. I just cold turkey stopped. So, you know, that told me that if I can do that, I can stop using this crap, this base. Asking for help, you know, I was always brought up to believe that if you ask somebody for help, that makes you weak. You know, NA, what's the NA? I didn't know what the NA was. You know, this is, what, back in the early 80s? So I could, needless to say, I kept smoking and smoking and smoking and smoking until I started losing and losing and losing and losing. Now, I was fortunate enough to gain, amass a lot of wealth. And, you know, that was important for me. But I couldn't accept the fact that I was losing myself. I was losing my higher power. I was losing my family. I was losing every semblance of sanity that I had, or thought that I had. You know, this program says that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. Well, to me, at that particular time, there was no power greater than me. You know, some of the worst thing we as addicts tend to cling on to is our sense of pride. But pride will kill you. You know, all of the values that I had as a child seemed to kind of like just start going out the window. You know, here I am, an individual who never stole from anybody. I never wronged anybody. Remember, I'm a people pleaser. I want to try and do for you as opposed to do something that's going to hurt you. You know, because me as a people pleaser, you know, I'm constantly in search of acceptance from you. I couldn't accept myself, but I had to gain acceptance from you before I could get acceptance of me. Just what is acceptance? Anybody know? Is belonging. A sense of belonging. We try to belong to whoever or whatever, as that is, has the most of what we want. Alright? As a recovering addict, on the other hand, I gotta belong to my higher power. First. Now, that took me a long time. I've been drugging for like over 35 years. I only have a little over 2 years clean. You know, I don't have all the answers to say, well, I know what this is and what this is and how to do this and do that. I have to come here to learn. It took me 35 plus years to come into these rooms after being beat down, hurt, shot, stabbed. You know, because all of that glamour that I was talking about, after I really got into this base thing, that shit went out the window. All that glamour turned into pure ugliness and misery. I started losing jobs, friends, everything. I called myself going into business for myself, made mad money for the first year. And then after making that, I said, well, I'll sit home and just smoke myself away. Because I had no sense of self, no sense of self-worth at that time. I got to a point where they say that we as addicts turn into vampires. You know, they only see us at night. You know, I'd stay up all night long getting high. You know, doing what I was doing. When daylight came, I was too scared to go outside and go to work. Or even look for a job if I didn't have one. You know, all that fear started coming and setting in. What brought me into these rooms, after the fact that I figure I can't accept myself for who I am, so, and I can't accept my situation, I had to have a geographical change. That was my solution. So I figured I'd move. You know, maybe I can meet new people, get some acceptance from them, and go on with my life. I came to learn that wherever I go, there I am. I gotta take me wherever I go. And that was a hard pill to swallow. Because I didn't know that, you know, change comes from within. You know, I didn't know that. I had to come here to learn that. So, as a result of not knowing that, I had to go and do some more suffering. I moved from New York City to Virginia. But because I didn't have any recovery, I found myself coming back to New York every other weekend, making these runs, you know, because I felt like I just didn't fit in, you know. I went down there and had a face like this, and then as soon as I left off the bus, take that mask off and be who I was, an addict, chasing that shit. Then I come back, put that mask right back on. So I wasn't really changing. I was just acting. I thought I'd go try to fit in religion. But you know something? The church is all good. You know, it's good to have a higher power and a God of your understanding. But I can't talk to people in the church because they're not going to accept me once I tell them I'm an addict. And holding that in is just keeping me sick. Because, you know, your secrets keep you sick. So that's a secret that you hold me. Still hadn't learned about NA yet. You know, moved back to New York, back into the mission. Well, I figured, hey, I got here, I can get clean here. Let me go into a program. Because what really drove me into a program is that I made the cardinal sin of stealing from my mom. Now, I don't know about y'all, but for me, that was cardinal sin. You know, that's the thing that really hurt me to a point of driving me into recovery. The only bad thing about that is that I still came into recovery more so for her than for coming into for myself. You know, I couldn't accept the fact that I stole from my mind. I couldn't accept that. I just couldn't accept it. You know, that was totally unacceptable. So, after I came out of this rehab, I went right back out and got relapsed. And stayed out for a good little while. But the one thing that I did learn by going into recovery or into a rehab was the fact that I learned about NA. I was in denial of the fact that I was also a drunk, you know. But a drug is a drug. Alcohol is a drug. But, you know, I was in denial of that. But they had to hit me to that. But I came right back out. And I noticed that once I picked up that pipe again, I couldn't get high the same. Because this program set a seed in my mind that more or less just kind of springboarded my fun. Or actually not springboard, but it just deterred my fun. You know, there was a message that was told to me that just blocked all of that out. So I couldn't get high anymore. I'm just using. And I couldn't see the sense in just doing it just to be doing it. I'm blowing money. I'm wasting time, you know. So I did get something. I didn't know what, but I did get something. I got a sponsor that, from the first time I was in recovery, that I picked up and we bonded. I fell in love with him as a brother. And he kept telling me, he said, you know, you're missing something. What am I missing? He said, you can't get in touch with you. I said, I don't understand. What do you mean I can't get in touch with myself? You're not getting in touch with the person who you are. Well, shit, I grew up with me all these years. I know who I am. I thought. I really didn't, you know, because I couldn't realize that I didn't accept me from just being an addict first and foremost. I just thought that I was a person who just liked to get high. You know? Am I an addict? I still couldn't accept that. I'm not out there putting a needle in my arm. I'm not out there, you know, homeless. His response was, "You're not out there yet." I'll never get to that point. I'll never do that. That word never is a yet. Okay. Whatever. Needless to say, I went back out. Kept using. You know, I kept looking for other ways externally to validate what I was feeling or what I was thinking. I had to think about how I looked, how I sounded, you know, how I appeared to others, but I refused to think about who I was. That part was denial. I just kept on. Today, well, before I get to today, I figured, something that used to always take me outside of me was extracurricular activities, sex, drugs, sports. But sex was something that really took me outside of me because I could immerse myself into somebody else. And then I could tell you what your faults are without looking at my own. So, you know, needless to say, my relationships never worked. You know, I'm 47 years old now. I ain't never been married. And, you know, I had to keep asking myself, why can't I hold a woman? Because I couldn't deal with them. You know, I couldn't deal with nobody else because I couldn't deal with my own shit. You know, it took me the reality of hitting a bottom that I never thought that I could hit. You know, like some of us derive to our bottom slowly. Some of us arrive at them swiftly. Some of us never even get a bottom. They just get a feeling and say, oops, I'm done. As I said, I had to keep relocating to try to get outside of my area. That was my logical thinking, that if I kept on moving, I'll find some happiness. I'll get that job that's paying that big money again that will make me feel all right. And you know, the weird part, God will put in your path what you need or what you think that you may need as a test. Because every time I would pray, you know, I always do those foxhole prayers. God, please get me out of this situation, and I won't do this ever again. And God kept on doing it. He put it in front of me and said, there's your road. Choose your path. And, you know, I wind up getting jobs that would pay mad money. Situations, jobs people would dream about, because, you know, I'm addicted to money like a motherfucker. You know, I would keep getting jobs that was paying $30, $40 an hour, sometimes $50 an hour. You know, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year. And then I'd fuck it up. One way or another, either directly or indirectly, as a result of my usage. You know, I think that, you know, I'm making all this money. Yeah, now I can save, you know, I can work, and I can find some self-worth. Couldn't find it. What brought me into the rooms was a job situation. Because, once again, I moved from New York, back from New York to Pittsburgh, on a, what many people would call a job of a lifetime or dream. Company car, all access account, company credit cards, phone cards, travel expense account, the whole nine. Where nobody's after me, I work for myself pretty much. I just gotta fill out paper reports. You know? Worked my ass off for a solid year, made so much money, my pockets was like this. I didn't even have time to spend the money I was making, and made so much that I didn't even need to spend the money, the checks that I was getting. I was putting checks away in the bank and never even touching them for like months. Then all of a sudden, you know how when you get to a point where you feel, well, damn, I've been doing this so well and for so long, I need to reward myself. You know? We as addicts are good for that. We like to reward ourselves. But, you know, truth of the matter is, I can reward myself whether I'm feeling good or bad. I started rewarding myself, and, you know, when I moved here, into Pittsburgh, I didn't know a soul, don't have relatives here, don't know nobody. So, you know, I said, I'm safe. Because I don't know where to go get the drugs. So, as long as I don't know where they're at, you know, I'll be all right. But the truth of the matter is, we as addicts, we can find drugs in the desert if we want to get high. So by the time I felt I needed to reward myself, I knew where to go. You know, I've driven through the neighborhoods. I rewarded myself. And my pain and misery was fully refunded. I think I spent probably about $2,000 or $3,000 in a night. People pleasing. Because I couldn't accept me. Once I started, it was like, damn, I don't feel right doing it by myself. Let me go turn all y'all on, you know. Well, needless to say that, for once, I didn't lose the job because I wasn't showing up. In fact, I did the job so well that they rewarded me by not renewing my contract. Hey, that's all right. Company says, well, you no longer have a job. Since we can't get a service contract, that means that you don't have any work. Okay. I got money in the bank. I'm cool. Thinking I was all right. Thinking I was all of that. Thinking that, you know, if I just stop getting her, because I really haven't started, I just chill, you know. I'll be all right. But, you know, me, this addict, can't be all right within his own skin without having some kind of external shit going on. I can't accept me for me. I gotta drag you in too. You know, and I said, well, okay, well, I met this young lady, I figured I'd get married. Invited her up from Virginia. She comes up and we make plans. But that part of it is she used to. Two addicts together are bad company. and she wasn't in recovery. Well, I still had to validate myself, so I needed her, so I thought. You know, I had to validate my existence. Figured the love wasn't there, but I still had to feel good about something, so I might as well have somebody in my corner, because I don't know nobody else around here. The bills started not getting paid. I couldn't find a job because my unemployment was making more money. I was making more money than I could just not working. I couldn't find a job giving me as much as I was on unemployment. So why work? Why look for a job? That's that logical thinking, you know, that sick thinking that we had a child, you know, why work? As the count goes down, okay, we can relocate, let's move somewhere before we get kicked out. Now, God had a plan for me. You know, all those things that I said I'd never do, I'll never steal, I'll never do this, I'll never do that, I started doing. I started, wound up from making all that money to robbing Giant Eagle stores for steaks and fish and every other kind of meat just so I could support my happy stuff. So, the way I got here was that I had to lose everything. Everything. I mean, every material thing that I own, every piece of clothing I own, every piece of family I had, every friend I had, everything. When I mean everything, when I walked into this program, I had on sneakers, socks, drawers, jeans, t-shirt, and that's it. And nothing else. And as they say, we don't come in here willingly, but I had nowhere else to go. So, you know, I had to accept the fact that I have to start from the ground and work myself up. I have to change my life, and the only way I could change my life is to change from within here. I had to work on me. I had to do anything and everything that this program told me to do. Because if I didn't, I'd be doing the same old shit that I was doing. I'd be feeling the same way that I was feeling. Lost, miserable, without friend, without hope, hopeless. When I came in here, I realized that there was hope. I realized that this program does work. If I work it, if I chase after my recovery as much as I chase after my drugs, my women, my job, then I'll be all right. If I can find acceptance within myself, then life will be okay. I can find happiness and peace of mind. And since I've been here, that's what I found. I found love, happiness, peace of mind, freedom from addiction, freedom from obsession and compulsion to use. I no longer have a desire to use. I'm not going to lie, I do think about it from time to time. But when I think about it, I think about the misery. What got me here right to this point where I am. Now, in early recovery for me, it was hard for me to accept the fact that I lost everything. But, you know, I look at that now as a blessing. I can accept my losses, and mark them as gains. I may have lost every material thing that I own, but I gained myself back. I've gained my self-esteem. I've gained my dignity. I've gained the respect of my family and peers, because I didn't have that for years. This program has given me so much that I have to hit my knees every night and thank my higher power for what he has given me. You know, because all the crap that I had before, all the material things, the wealth, the accolades, all of that, means nothing. I mean, it doesn't mean anything to me. It's just experience. You know, I thank God every day for this program. That's why when I open up any meeting or begin to share, I always say, I thank my higher power first, and I thank this program second. Because every day that I wake up, I have to have gratitude. You know, as Jesse Jackson said, it's gratitude that shows, reflects on your attitude, which determines your altitude. I've come to realize that in this program, if you can accept this program, you can accept unlimited success. Unlimited, that means no limits. Because the only limits that are on your success in this program are what you place on it. You can go as far as you want. If you work this program into your everyday life, in all aspects of your life, you can do anything. I've been in recovery now for 2.5 years. Not that it matters, that material things matter, but I have recouped everything that I've lost and some. Only because I'm practicing principles and working steps and working this program on a daily basis and living for today. One day at a time. I'm not, you know, I ain't perfect. You know, I don't do things perfect. I don't know everything. You know, I can be humble today and not be big-headed and say, well, you know, I'm all of that, and, you know, because I'm not. You know, I'm just an addict. But today I know I'm an addict. And I can accept myself as being an addict. And I can accept y'all as being addicts. And together we can, you know, we are blessed. You know, you help. I've learned that in this program, y'all help me more than I can help you sometimes. Most of the time. You know, if I can just reach one person, that's a blessing for me. You know. These are little things that I like about this program. You know, I'm not the greatest orator. You know, I don't have all the knowledge of the prophets. You know, I'm not all that intellectual, but I do have recovery. Now, do I have this program down pat? No. The only thing I can have to offer and to give is my experience, strength, and hope. That's it. You know, because I don't have all the answers. And with that, I'll say thank you for letting me share. I want to thank Laurel Mountain area for allowing me to come up here and speak. I really didn't know what I was going to talk about, and you know, like I never try to practice or say what I'm going to speak. I just speak. I think the greatest gift that I can give is my own experience, strength, and hope. You know, and if any of y'all can learn anything from that, hey, God loves you today. Thanks for letting me share.
Yeah, I'd like to thank the speaker for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. I got a lot out of it. I really liked it. Can we please have the reading just for today? Well, before we get that, I'd like to introduce the second speaker. Okay, I don't know her real well. I just met her also. She seems like a really nice lady. I'll probably get just as much out of it. Without any further, I'd like to introduce Diane B. from the Saturday Night Serenity Check group of Narcotics Anonymous in the State College area.
Hi, everybody. I'm Diane. I'm an addict. Well, I have to tell you, first of all, I was really honored when John called and asked me to do this, and he said, would you speak on one of two topics, either why are we here for self-acceptance? And I said, okay, can I have a minute to think about it? And he said, well, no, actually, I'd like you to speak on self-acceptance. And I said, oh, okay, and hung up, and then I got really angry. Because I didn't want to talk about self-acceptance, because I felt like I don't even know what that is. I've been coming around for a while, and I like to think I know what self-acceptance is, but I started to think, what would I even say? I didn't have a clue. So I did what I was taught to do, and I got out some NA literature. There's a pamphlet on self-acceptance, which was really a big help for me. And you know, I read it, and at first I thought, oh, you know, I don't get any of this stuff. And then I prayed about it, and I read it some more. And I don't know why I thought I didn't get anything. But the thing that I wanted to start with is that it says that it's okay. A spiritual understanding of self-acceptance, so this is the understanding for me, is it's okay to find ourselves in pain, to have made mistakes, and to know that we are not perfect. And that's kind of what self-acceptance is not for me. I don't think that it's okay to be in pain. I don't think that it's okay to make mistakes. And even though I know I'm not perfect, it is my job to convince the world that I am. So that, like beginning with that, was kind of a big help for me. And then the thinking about it, just sitting here and hearing the stuff that Lawrence was talking about brought back a lot of stuff for me, too. I can remember being 4 years old in kindergarten, and although I didn't realize it then, I remember being really angry because I got the little red sticks to beat, you know, instead of the really neat tambourine or the little drum or the cymbal and stuff when you had to march around in circles. And the sticks weren't good enough. And so because I had the sticks, I thought I wasn't important enough, and I wanted that tambourine or I wanted that triangle. And I know that sounds stupid, but at 4 years old, I felt like I needed something outside of myself to make myself look okay. And I've spent my whole life doing that without knowing it. I know when I was a young teenager, I think I was like, I weighed, I don't know, 80 pounds maybe. I was really short. I'm still short, but I was skinny. So that was good. I tried to fit in with a cheerleader group in school. You know, or I'll hang out with them. I remember trying out for cheerleading, and I didn't get that. So because I couldn't have that, I did what Lauren said. I went to the other side. I then hung out with what we called years and years ago the hoods, and so I wore all black. And so here's this little 4'9", 4'10" kid wearing black heels, black stockings, black skirt, black shirt, black eye. Well, actually, my eyeliner was blue, but I had white lipstick. So I mean, it was quite attractive. But this group accepted me. And so even though I was a really scared little kid, I hung out with these really tough what I thought, tough 13-year-old kids. But those people took me in. Those people also did dope. At the time, there wasn't that much dope in the school, so the illegal dope was illegal for us still, though, but the drug of choice was alcohol then, so I drank, and I hated it. It tasted terrible. I didn't like how I felt. I felt like I was totally out of control, but that's what everybody else did, so I was going to do that, too. And I did that for a long time. Then when I got out of high school and got into college, then I got to become, not the hood, I got to become the little kid that wore the little matching sweaters and skirts, you know, and so I looked all perfect and pretty, and I hung out with that crowd, and I pledged the sorority, and I don't know how I got accepted, but I did, and so I made that who I was, and I became the sorority girl for a long time. So, you know, as a little kid, I was good. I went to church, always trying to do what would make people like me, because I never felt okay, and I didn't know that I didn't feel okay. I just never did. And I learned throughout my life that there are a million things out there that I can do and pretend that I am instead of figuring out who I am. And I've tried to do a lot of those things. You know, I've had really good jobs and tried being a successful business person, and I wasn't happy. I tried being the radical hippie who went to protest marches and hitchhiked across country, and didn't that make me great, you know, and so therefore I was wonderful and I felt good, but I didn't feel good then either. I thought that I would try the marriage and parent thing. Fortunately, I did not get pregnant, fortunately for the child that I would have had, and I mean that sincerely. I've been married several times. I can't do that well either. I'm getting better at that in recovery. But all of these things I always looked at as things outside of myself, that other people did, that stuff that happened to me, somehow it had nothing to do with me. I was married three times. I was married legally three times, lived with a guy for 5 years, and three out of those four fell apart. I'm still in the fourth one right now, hoping that it will succeed. But I blamed everybody. It wasn't my fault. It was everybody else's fault. Finally, and it's only been in this past year that I've accepted that, you know, it probably is my responsibility. Yeah, other things happen, but I have to accept that I played a part. This just didn't happen by itself. And it also says here, our defects are part of us and will only be removed when we practice living the NA program. Until I identified that I had defects, I couldn't start to work on these things. And I couldn't identify that I had defects because I couldn't accept myself. And that would mean giving up that persona that I put out. Whether it was a good persona or a bad persona, didn't matter. It was just something that wasn't me. There's another part here, too. I want to find it because this is so important to me. Give me 1 second here to find it. And I can't. But basically what it says in here is if I find myself angry, if I find myself alone, if I find myself critical of other people, there are all sorts of things, harsh critics, wallowing in self-loathing. If I find that, it's not about anybody else, it's about me. And that's when I need to really pay attention. That when I'm pointing my finger at you, it's because there's something really wrong here. And because I don't accept myself. You know, I'm an addict. I didn't use because it was a great thing to do. I mean, and I can admit, when I was young, I thought doing drugs was fun, but not when I started. I did not have a good time the first time that I got high. It didn't feel good at all to me, but I went back and did it again. Even smoking. I couldn't walk and smoke at the same time because it made me dizzy. But I practiced. You know, I thought, well, I'm going to keep doing this till I get the hang of it, till I learned how to do it. And I did, you know. That was a hard thing to stop. But looking back at all those things, self-acceptance is not something, it seems so easy. Self-accept. You I can accept. You I can accept. I can accept all of you. I can have pity for myself. But I can't accept myself. And in fact, part of that for me is when I got into the program finally, and I don't want to, I use whatever drugs everybody else used, you know, and I use them in the same way that everybody else did. And some of my story is the same and some of it is different, but it doesn't matter. It all got me here. I'm an addict. I have the disease of addiction. And putting down the drugs did not stop the disease of addiction for me. It just gave me the opportunity to start getting better as a human being. Was it you? Somebody said that today, that we don't talk about being human until the sixth step. That was the beginning, and I didn't want to hear that. I was so fortunate I came into recovery in York, and one of the biggest blessings that I have gotten coming up to this retreat is that I live in State College now, and I've moved throughout my addiction, or my recovery, I should say. Three people from York were here, and one of them spoke earlier this morning. I was like, wow, and they were from my home group. And I haven't seen those people or talked to anybody probably in, I don't know, many, many years. And I found that while some have gone back out, most are still there. And that was a real exciting thing for me. But in that, I was real fortunate to get clean there because, man, my sponsor used to just beat me up big time. And not only my sponsor, everybody else seemed to think that I was fair game as well, you know. Because that's how recovery was. And it says right here, the first step towards acceptance is acceptance of our addiction, the belief in a power greater than ourselves who can restore us to sanity. I didn't know I was insane. I do now, but I didn't then. But that's the first part in self-acceptance. And the second part is that it's okay to make mistakes, like I said, but although it's painful, and it might not seem to lead to my self-acceptance, it's critical that I get in touch with my feelings. It's critical that I evaluate who I am, what I'm doing, and why I do the things that I do. And I didn't do anything because I liked who I was. Nothing. I didn't do anything in my early years of recovery because I liked who I was. I did them so that you would like who I was. Or so that you wouldn't like who I was, because I went that way a lot of times too. It was easy for me to push you away before you pushed me away. And I always thought you'd all push me away. I don't know if you've done this, but every meeting I used to go to for probably the first year and a half, I was sure that you were talking about me. When you were talking about like character defect stuff, I knew you were talking about me. Not that you were telling my story, but you were literally talking about me. You knew stuff about me and you were saying it in the room. And I truly believe that. I have no self, I have acceptance now, but I had none then. The tools that I've been taught to work on gaining those things was first to accept that I'm an addict and what that means. I also thought, like Lauren said, well, I stopped doing different drugs all different times during my life, so I may be addicted to a drug, but that's it. As soon as I stop being addicted to that drug, I'm fine again. And when I did finally stop doing drugs, I did church for a long time. I went to church 6 days a week. You know, I didn't just go one day. I was like, oh, here's a church. Let me go here 6 days a week, and I did. And I joined every possible committee and whatever that there was in that church. And another thing I used to do, too, I really liked when I was in church, I helped everybody else. I worked with a youth group. And so I had no problems, and I could help you fix yours. These young girls used to call me so much that my ear would get swollen from being on the phone. So instead of acknowledging that maybe I have a problem here, I got a speakerphone. You know, and that fixed it. My ear wasn't sore anymore. But I didn't have to look at me all that time. I looked at everybody else. And that lasted for a while, and then I went back out again because it really wasn't covering up the fact that I didn't accept myself well enough. I don't know. The biggest thing that I do for myself today is a serenity prayer for self-acceptance. And this is what I was taught. you know, to ask my higher power to grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't change, and then I stop right there. What can I change? And that's what I have to look at for any situation. You know, this is real personal to me, and it's not part of addiction, but it is part of my recovery. What I'm working on today is I can't change that I was abused as a child. I hadn't admitted that until just this past year. And you know, I want to change that. I want to make that be different, but I can't. And I don't want to accept that that happened to me. I don't want to accept that that's what my life was. I just don't want to do that. But you know what? If I don't, I will use. And I know that's the truth. I truly know that. So all I can do is ask my higher power for the serenity to accept the things I can't change. Because I don't have serenity about it. You know, you can ask my therapist. But I need to get that serenity. So I have to hit my knees and I have to ask for that. Then I have to ask for, once I identify that, and usually the first thing I think of is you is what needs to be changed, you know, or I need to go beat my father's dead, so I can't do anything to him now. But I can certainly beat my mother up or my sister or my other relatives. And so, you know, that's what I think I should do. But that's not it either. What can I change? I can't change. What I can change is me. I can change my attitude. I can change what I do about it. I can change how I act about it. I can change whether I keep it a secret. I can change whether I talk to other recovering people and let them know the pain that I'm in. Lord knows I don't want you guys to know that I have any kind of pain or feel insecure. So I ask for the serenity. So except the things I can't change, the courage to change what I can, which is what I just said. It's just me. You know, I can stand up here and tell you guys that I'm an addict. I can stand up here and admit out loud to a bunch of people that bad shit happened in my life. That's not an excuse. You know, it's just life on life terms. And if I want to pretend that that's not true, I can do that too. But I'll never learn to accept myself. I'll just never get there. And boy, I want that so much. I want that more than anything today. I know how to not use now. You guys taught me that. It's not a challenge anymore for me to not pick up one day at a time. It isn't. And I'm so grateful to be able to say that. And that took a long, long time to get there. Doing what everybody else talks about and continuing to do it. But that's not the challenge in my life today. Challenge in my life today is to be okay with who I am and to not put you off because I'm feeling defensive, to not try to trick you because I want to manipulate things to make me look good, to not do those things. They're the kind of things I deal with on a daily basis. And I do that through here too. It's a good thing the steps are not just for not picking up, it's for my whole disease. You know, and I thought I had self-acceptance. I thought, yeah, I'm pretty good. I got a good job. I got married. I live in a neat house. Sheep live next door. That's really cool. I have money in the bank that I don't spend on anything. I'm saving for when I'm older than I am now and can't work anymore. So, you know, I have self-acceptance, I think. And then somebody says something in a meeting that offends me or hurts my feelings. You know, I take that self-acceptance out of my pocket, and I throw it on the floor, and I step on it. And I do that. I intentionally, with knowledge, do that. It doesn't just happen. I do it because feelings come up, and I don't want to feel those feelings. So if I don't accept myself, it's not that you're hurting me anymore. It's me that's hurting myself. And I become the victim. I love being the victim. When I'm thinking with a clear mind in recovery, I don't like being the victim, but when I'm thinking with a lot of pain inside, I want to just run right there. Oh, everything is so hard. My life is so bad. Oh, my father did bad things to me. You know, that's true. You know, those things are true, but what does that have to do with today? You know, I'm an adult. I'm in recovery. I can make a choice about what happens to my life today, but it's much easier to be that victim. The other tool that, I'm over, so I'll close up with this. The last thing I really want to say is that The other tool that was given to me as my first sponsor refused to let me say the words, I can't. I am not allowed to say that, and I still don't say that. I have to say I won't, or I choose not to. Because as long as I say I can't, I'm not accepting who I am, I'm not accepting the strength and the abilities that I have in the fellowship, and I'm making everybody else at fault. So to accept me, I have to say, I won't. When I said, oh, I can't dump that guy who I used to use with. I can't stop seeing him because I can help him get into recovery, you know. Now the choice is, I won't dump him because I want him to still like me and I want to keep that little reservation hanging out there for me, you know. I can't deal with the fact that I'm going to have to get honest that I am vessel for my job. I can't do that. Yeah, I can. I just won't. And if I just make that little choice for every statement that I say today, if I hear myself say, I can't, I say, nope, I won't. I can, but I won't. And as soon as I say that, I have to do something. You know, I have to, especially if I tell you that I won't do it. You know, I won't do that. Well, I can't live in that arrogance for very long anymore because you guys won't let me. So I still don't have the handle on this. I'm so grateful for this IP, you know. It's like, I'll read it a million more times. And I would suggest that you all read that, too, the fact that you came to this particular workshop. This is really good. And there are really good things in the basic text if you look it up in the index, you know, because I did that, too. You know, so self-acceptance. So you don't have to read the whole thing cover to cover all at once to find it. But please, I don't know, just thank you for letting me be here. And the last thing I want to say is that it's okay that I don't accept myself today. It's not okay that I stay there, but it is okay that I don't have that yet. I can just keep working to get it. And I did scoop it up off the floor after I tossed it down the other day, and I did dust it off, and I did put it back in my pocket. And I don't feel real good about it yet, but it's getting better. So that's what I've got. Thanks for letting me share.